Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the PGA of Canada Tee Talks podcast. My name is Mark Rowe from TSN, and joining us today is an associate professor in the School of Leadership Studies at Royal Roads University. Now, her work focuses on values-based leadership, organizational culture change, and creativity. She has more than 30 years of leadership experience spanning multidisciplinary fields, including counseling, social services, not-for-profit agencies, small business development, and adult education. Now, she is also a scholar practitioner with her own consulting business since 2000. In addition to that, our guest has also been the executive director of the Parksville and District Chamber of Commerce, which is a not-for-profit agency serving at-risk youth. She is the program head for the Master of Arts in Leadership and graduate certificate in Values-Based Leadership. Today, we have the one and only Dr. Kathy Bishop. Great to have you, Dr. Bishop.
Wonderful to be here with you, Mark. Thanks so much. Really appreciate the chance to talk about values-based leadership.
Well, you like many of our guests have such an impressive resume, and sometimes, you look at that and you just keep saying wow, and you think you kind of know what this person has been able to accomplish in their career, but you definitely want to know more. And I think you're in that case too, because well, let's help our listeners understand what really does it mean to be a values-based leader in today's world.
Great question right off the bat. So in today's world, we really are living in extraordinary times, times like no other. We're facing a host of wicked problems economically, politically, socially, technologically, environmentally, and we've never experienced before what we're experiencing with globalization and all the complexity. And so we need leadership to be bigger than these problems. And to be a values-based leader in today's world then means that you have the character and capability to meet the challenges and make a difference with your people, in your organization, and in your community. Now, most people assume that values-based leadership is about a leader acting with values. Well, this is true, and it's more than that. Values-based leadership is about dedicating ourselves to our highest purpose. It's about influencing, mobilizing, and engaging with others toward a shared mission for the greater good. And what I love about values-based leadership and the theory behind it is that values offer us a pathway. They serve as beacons to guide our behavior. They're the energy behind and the drivers of our decisions and our behaviors. And they also are anchors so that we don't get off path. We don't get blown off the path when the going gets tough. And as leaders, our call is really to live values intentionally and explicitly, to be and do leadership. And having the big picture is a real key part of this.
Okay. I was definitely one of those people that thought, okay, so it's just a leader with good values and let's move on. It's obviously, way more elaborate than that. So, we often see businesses spend really a ton of money and time on developing a new strategic plan and develop values for their website and marketing collateral, and everything sounds great. And then you know what happens? That plan often makes its way onto the bookshelf and seldom thought of again. So, for those certainly that are listening that have either experienced that or might fall into that trap, what can leaders do to change this behavior and ensure, values are ingrained in their day-to-day operations?
We live in a society that really has eclipsed the whole conversation of why we do what we do. And the focus tends to be on the what we're doing and the results with a bit of the how we do it. And so values have become this checkbox as part of the corporate profile, but it hasn't become part of the corporate culture. So to change this, leaders really need to know why their organizations exist and seek to foster those values competencies throughout the organization. And before I go there, I just want to take a step back though, because leadership is also about leading self. And what we know is that leaders have they set the tone and atmosphere for a culture. So they really do have to have an understanding of their own values, and that values don't occur in isolation. They build off each other developmentally. And so it's important for them to take time to reflect upon their own values first. And so Brian Hall, who was a scholar, identified a universal leadership pathway in which values interconnect and mark the way of a leader. So he talks about core values of leadership path include self-preservation, security, self-worth, competence and confidence, equality, liberation, integration, wholeness, being self, faith, risk, vision, truth, wisdom, and word, which speaks to empowering and inspiring communication. So as an entry point into values-based leadership, I invite all leaders to reflect on and name what makes up their values in their own leadership pathway, and then how they're living them in their behavior and action. And then having this cornerstone of leading self, they can look to leading organizations and expand this process to work with their people to identify that set of shared values that are in service to the organization purpose, mission, and strategic objectives. So again, it starts with self, it moves to modeling the way, and then in terms of looking at the values within the organization so that they're not just these pretty words up on the wall, there's a recognition that values work is a daily practice, not a one-off. It shows up in what we do, and that leaders make that commitment to live their values, model the way for their people, and intentionally infuse the organization values in all the organizational policies and see how that it's threaded throughout the organization vision, structure, process, relationships, and partnerships. So here, let me give an example. Take Augustus National. So everything is spectacular. Everyone from employees to patrons to the world knows what it's trying to achieve. Looking at the company statement, though, because in full transparency, I'm not a golfer, so I look deeper at Augusta. And right off the bat, they say that at Augusta National, we're committed to being the best in all that we do, upholding the values of continuous improvement and unparalleled service in all endeavors. So that's on its front page. And then when I was digging deeper around to see about their people, I found it stated, our employees are our most valuable resources in delivering unparalleled service to our members. So you can start to see there's a deliberate and explicit thread, that unparalleled service, that runs through the vision, structure, process, relationships, and partners. And so you can bet every employee from the back shop kid to the CEO knows why they're there and the standards that they will or will not accept. And that's built right into their cultures. So if organizational leaders want to have the best golf experience in Canada, then everyone in the organization needs to deliver that level of service. And this is where it's, okay, the value is around quality and service and excellence. And the details in terms of the behaviors is what happens each and every day. So if a member's clubs aren't cleaned when a member comes in, then the organization isn't living their value of exceptional service. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the back shop kid, the rule is to clean the member's clubs. However, and here's the secret sauce, if you help them understand why they're doing what they're doing and the importance and instill in them the value of exceptional service and hold them to the standard, then this exceptional service becomes grounded in the culture.
So a couple of times you've mentioned culture, and that's where I wanted to go next, because, you know, by nature as a leader, you know, you're overseeing, you know, and depending on how big the company is, multiple people, hundreds, thousands, you know, and when you get to the corporate level, you know, you really do hear that word being thrown around a lot. I know from my own experience in broadcasting, working for a big company, you know, every other email is about culture. So because it's thrown around so much in business, maybe the best question I can ask for you at this moment is, what does culture mean to you?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. You know, really looking at organizations, because you're right, a lot of leadership development speaks to leading self and leading teams, and then throws around this word culture. So for me, on a real simple level, culture is the way we do things around here. Our way, our unique way. And so Edgar Schein, who was a culture guru, said that culture is to a group what personality or character is to an individual. But he also cautioned not to oversimplify it, to understand it, because there are a series of interacting elements to take into account. And you've sort of spoken to this as sort of that complexity. So there are things like customs, traditions, group norms, language, rituals, symbols, organizational structure, systems, procedures, incentive programs, and of course, beliefs and values. And so leaders' values are the powerful influences that shape the culture and the employee experience. So again, becoming aware of what their values are enables leaders to be mindful of how their words, behaviors, and actions impact others and ultimately the culture. And so just going further in terms of how then we can look at developing our cultures from sort of moving from some of that fear or mistrust to sort of higher order values like service and love, then what we found is that organizations that do this and have these higher levels of consciousness are proven to be more successful with happier employees, a happier bottom line, and greater impact in the world.
So, but that success, like when I'm thinking of someone in a leadership role and being successful within the company, like the first thing obviously you think of is that company profitable, or usually, you know, that is the, and that's somewhat, that's easy, right? You look at the numbers and did we make more money than we spent in the past year? We did. Okay. So we're profitable. It's not, it doesn't seem to be as black and white when we're talking about culture. So, you know, you gave a couple of examples of, you know, and employees being happier and being more efficient, but how would a leader measure sort of the culture within an organization?
Great. So one of the tools that I really like is looking at a cultural values assessment. So Richard Barrett wrote a book on the values-driven organization, and he devised a set of survey instruments called cultural transformation tools. And in particular, the cultural values assessment provides that data that offers a snapshot in time of the personal needs and motivations of people in the culture, what the current culture is from their perspective, and what the desired culture is. And so it gives a cultural score, it benchmarks metrics, it gives also a cultural entropy report, which offers sort of, you know, where, you know, the health of the organization is and where some of the unhealthy places are. And what I appreciate about Barrett's tool is the results include a process for interpreting the culture results by the people in the culture. So the tool is set up to have these deep, meaningful conversations about what assessment means, the priorities of the organization, and possible strategies to move forward. And so utilizing a tool like this is one of the ways that leaders can approach. But like any tool, it's just one. And really for me, measuring culture is about taking stock of where you are, where you want to go, and then seeing if you can move the dial. And recognizing, and this is where I find Barrett's work really valuable, and you touched on this, Mark, which is where you say, a lot of times people go right to the profit line in business. And what this particular model does is moves from profit through to purpose, so that there's values. And he designs a seven level model. There's what he says is seven levels of consciousness that you have to take into account from all the way from profit to purpose in order for a culture to be successful. And those all those variables need to be looked at measuring. And that's why having sort of a tool that really looks at what people's motivations are, what their needs are within that range, because it's not all about the security and the viability, but there's other things like relationship, there's like performance, there's things like learning and evolution, there's things like being aligned, being sharing a purpose, sharing sort of purpose with others, there's things like making a difference, contributing. So all of these come together in the culture. And so it can't be just simply by having sterile statistics that say, okay, we start it, you know, with this profit and loss statement. Yes, that's definitely one element of it, but there needs to be other ways of looking at it too.
You know, as I was preparing for today's episode, and you know, it's mostly so I can sound like I kind of know what I'm talking about, and then you can just, you know, run with that ball and take it at that point. But I kept seeing the phrase culture entropy come up. What does that mean for businesses and leaders?
Excellent. You know, like entropy, again, is the amount of energy in a group that is consumed in unproductive work, and it affects organizational performance. So if you think about when you go into work and you spend an hour venting or being ranted at, it feels lousy and you don't get anything done. So entropy really is a measurement of the conflict or friction or frustration that exists within a group. And so what we find is that unhealthy values that lead to entropy are things like competition, blame, conflict avoidance, bureaucracy, silos mentality, confusion. And so we can look deeper then, like in a culture of blame, where staff are blaming leadership and leadership are blaming staff, nothing's going to get done. Things halt. You can see that people are stuck. The solution then rests in understanding that there's an underlying fear of either survival, safety, or security there. And to look for what might be the healthy expression of that value and how to meet it. And not only as a leader to look for it, sometimes it's just to ask people what's going on and then listen to see how it comes and check it out. So with regards to blame, it may be about a fear of agency or loss of control. And so how might more agency be given to the staff in a way that leaders don't feel a loss of control? So you can start to dig deeper under what's really going out rather than just getting stuck on the surface level of blame.
Right.
And so the lower the cultural entropy in your organization, the higher your organizational performance and cultural well-being will be. And to address this, it's really important to have sort of a full spectrum of leadership values.
So as we speak to a golf industry at this moment, it is no different than any other industry that operates in the VUCA world. And for those who are unfamiliar with that acronym, it stands for volatile, unpredictable, complex, and ambiguous. So how does a leader navigate through these turbulent times?
Well, that's a $1 million question, isn't it?
Yes. And everyone's got a pen and paper right now as they're listening to this.
Well, exactly. And I think to really navigate through it, leaders need to make decisions that take into account both current needs and think about sort of the long-term impact in an unknown future. So, you know, it's really rests in showing up with a sense of purpose and clear values, because this really requires a fundamental shift. It's about getting into action through values, not rules. There's, you know, in an ambiguous world, there are no best practices. We don't know what the best practices is, but there are best processes, and those processes are our values. And so our values are what's important to us. And to have that deeper sense of what matters, that then we can make adjustments as we go, as we live our leadership. And we also can't do that alone. Like, we need to do that collaboratively and have dialogues about our values individually and collectively. So by drawing on values-based leadership, organizational leaders can mobilize toward that shared mission through aligning the personal and organizational values. They can be explicit and transparent in their communication. They can engage in true collaboration. And this is what I mean. I don't mean the manager who calls together people to collaborate and then tells them what to do. Like, this is coordination. Like, we need to know the subtlety of what really is being valued here. And collaboration recognizes the need for diversity, not just ticking a hiring box, but bringing different perspectives together to find new solutions to these big societal challenges that we're facing both locally and globally.
You know, in reading up on your own personal achievements and just talking to you, you know, you clearly are successful in your field because, you know, you want more knowledge and you have a desire for those new experiences. But I can imagine you can go on a million different places to get that. And you might not get to where you want to get to because of that, or you might waste a lot of time. So where do you personally go for your own leadership development and learning and growth? Because, you know, clearly, you know, if you chart your career, you've gone down that path continually.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have an intentional leadership practice, which includes continuous learning. And knowing that leadership development includes things like leading self, leading others, and leading an organization, I'm always on the lookout. I'm open to opportunities in these areas that are both formal and informal. So I attend and present at conferences to stay current. I do specific professional development. And even recently I signed up for a graduate course in ways of Indigenous leadership and learning at a local college. So that's kind of some of the formal ways that I do, but as a professor, I'm also surprised and delighted by the learning leaders that I come into contact. You know, there's many leadership courses that teach you what to do as a leader, but our XL, for our executive leadership program, and our graduate certificate, at its very core, it's about how to be a leader and co-create thriving cultures and innovative organizations. So I get to learn and lead alongside my students because we're all trying to figure it out as we go forward. So when I talk about the leadership practice, it's a way to really root down with reflection, practice, and looking for opportunities, a way to sort of seek to sort of live my own purpose and build my character. And I just want to say, you know, in the Western world, we really do have this mythology that genius happens without learning. You know, that there's this false notion that, you know, genius doesn't need study, it doesn't need exposure to the work of others or craftsmanship. It does. And so I really, you know, urge everyone to sort of set their own leadership practice and learning plan.
So are there any other tools as you speak to, you know, people who are leaders out there who want to improve and develop, much like yourself, that they can use?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about Barrett's cultural transformational tools. You know, for me, when I received that one, it was like, wow, now I've got a framework that when I go into situations, I can start to look at the whole different levels and move within those levels of consciousness and values that have been really powerful. But there's lots of different values-based leadership literature and tools that people can tap into. Edgar Schein wrote a seminal book on organizational culture and leadership. And he talks about embedding mechanisms into the culture. So you could try some of those where you build, you know, internal capacity for values, you know, through, you know, cultural ambassadors or cultural navigators to help move the organization. You could also seek out leadership programs. There's a variety of different ones. And I guess, though, one of the things that I just want to acknowledge about talking about tools, that sometimes that means that we're taking an instrumental approach rather than a transformational approach. And this is where I think it's really about building our capabilities. And don't get me wrong, I definitely like different techniques and I'm always looking for those gems of wisdom. But I really, you know, encourage that people do not underestimate the power of transforming sort of your mindset and building capabilities rather than just the latest and greatest tools. Because what we know is when leaders transform, the organizations transform. And that transformation comes when we change our beliefs and our values, because then our actions and our behaviors change. And this influences the values and beliefs, which in turn the culture. And so, you know, an example of this that I think about is if you have a value of creativity, that's going to lead you to a whole different set of actions and behaviors. than if you have a value of safety. And so again, I think as leaders, it's really a matter of looking at those and recognizing that any technique only works when we actually also integrate it into who we are.
And as you know, you talk about those values, they can change from generation to generation. And I'm sure you see that being at a university, right? Because yes, you're seeing all types of ages. And I think there's a lot of people probably listening right now who are leading teams who, you know, they might have someone who's in high school. They could have someone who this is a retirement job. Are there differences in what the values sort of are important to each of those generations? And how would you manage that?
Yes. yes. And not only among generations, but also in ourselves as we move through too, values do shift. But in terms of looking at generations, I appreciate reading something by Angel Oduko. She's from Johns Hopkins University and talked about the four generations: baby boomers, Generation X, millennials, and Generation Y, and offered some of their different values, wants and needs because of the different familiar upbringings and the social and political context. So we know boomers, you know, were born sort of 46 to 64. Their values are looking at being work-centric, workaholic, independent, self-assertive, goal-oriented, career-focused, competitive, self-actualized. Whereas and have a mindset that can be identified or was sort of framed up by Oduka. I'm sorry, I'm not pronouncing her name quite correctly, but that boomers sort of have this mindset of work as hard as you can, then work even harder next time. Mm-hmm. With Generation X, and they're born 65 to 80, 1980, their values really prioritize that hyper-independence, self-sufficiency, health, work-life balance, flexibility, technological creativity, and then again, work under sort of a mindset of work hard, play hard. So you can start to see that if I come in, you know, wanting to just work and somebody's coming in with work-life balance, we're already going to have some tensions between our values. With Generation Y or millennials, and they're born 1981 to 1996, and they actually they make up about a third of the workforce. They are really looking at sort of being progressive. They want to sort of align sort of core social, political, ethical values, have flexibility and really professional growth and development. And they really look at a mindset that's about working hard, playing harder, but only work where you can see yourself play. So you can start to see with these different mindsets, now things are happening. So there's different values. And then Generation X, which are in 1997 to the, you know, 2010, they're the first global generation. So they're the first group that truly have been without the knowledge of what it's like to grow up without digital technology. Mm-hmm. So again, their values include looking at meaningful work as well, but there also is another sort of sense in terms of wanting to sort of look at their own sort of work situations, their flexibility. There's a lot more emphasis on remote work options with Generation Z because they have that experience of being always on tech. So now what we know is that we can sort of look at these different broad sweeps and start to sort of see, okay, how can we not only better understand our employees this way, but how can we also help them ensure that their work environment continues to empower everybody? And I, you know, I think about like with boomers that, again, they're at a different life stage. So with boomers, potentially as a leader, you might be looking at helping them what might be their succession plan or moving out of the workforce. Whereas, again, with Generation Y, you might be looking at how do we give them more opportunities so that we can promote them into emerging leaders. And so The one thing that I'm thinking as I'm going is that although the concept of generations can really be helpful, it can also lead to biases, stereotyping, prejudice. You know, I was talking with these broad strokes. And then it can also mislead us as leaders around what our employees really need. And so, again, truly the best way forward is to talk, well, listen to your people, both individually and collectively, and hear what their needs or values are. And I think this is, you know, one of the juicy parts of being a leader and having that people-centric focus and helping them move forward with their needs and aligning it with the organization.
Because many of us, the instinct is the clash with those generations, right? Because
Yes.
the values are different. And you just think of a family dynamic, right? And, you know, my kids aren't working like I worked, and I had these jobs and I did this. And you know, there could be a point to it where, you know, you have a kid who's just not motivated, but you also have a kid who's got different values and a different upbringing, and the world is different. And it's the same in a workplace where, I guess the challenge is kind of almost respecting where those people are coming from and what really drives them, and also trying to get them on sort of your side as well, and trying to collectively achieve the objective of your business or your operation in general.
Yes, beautiful. Like imagine if we believed it all belonged. Like imagine if we said, you know what, all these values belong. And like you
Right.
said, like with and I think about my own sons, they have different values than me. And I learn from them because it's like, oh, I never thought about that way. I now have more work-life balance than I would have before. And maybe they learned from me. That's that omnidirectional mentorship piece. And so I think that part of where we're coming into our organizations is having an opening that, you know what, it all belongs, that there is a place where we can all show up in who we are as people. And then, this is back to you said, then how do we cultivate our collective wisdom and our collective shared vision of us going together? And that we don't all have to do the same thing. We don't all have to be the same way. That juiciness doesn't have to be conflict, but it could actually be sparks to move us forward.
So as we record this podcast, many of our listeners are in the winter season in golf and planning for the upcoming season in the spring. What would be some initial steps that leaders can take to make a shift to values-based leadership?
Beautiful. Well, I'm gonna probably say it again. A key focus for leadership development really is strengthening our character and our competency as leadership in leaders of organizations. So I would say that knowing that it's really about revisiting your own leadership and learning growth plan and practice, you know, take the time to reflect on, you know, why you do what you do. Consider what your core values are, consider what your organizational values are and how they align with your own organization. Ask the tough questions. Do we know who we are? Do we know where we're going? Are the right people here? You know, I understand that, you know, with golf courses, in terms of that there's different types of clubs. There's municipal clubs, resort clubs, country clubs, private clubs, and each have their own unique needs and expectations that members are coming to. And so, what does that mean to your club? What does it mean in the pro shop, the restaurant, the office, all the way through? And so, taking the time to sort of go below the surface and really start asking why people are at work and what they want to do to move things forward can start to really build a momentum and an excitement in terms of where you can potentially go. And I would say have some fun dreaming what your organization could be with others, then look at the values that will get you there and how they'll show up in your actions and workplace policies.
Dr. Bishop, before we started recording, I said how I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I get to pick your brain. And a lot of times it's the topics that I know less about that that are almost a little more fun for me. And this was the case as well. So we really appreciate you taking some time and enlightening us so much with your experience. And Hopefully it helps those who are listening. So thank you so much, and best of luck with everything going on.
Thanks, Mark. Such a pleasure. And yeah, and best of luck to everyone as they continue to forge forward to be part of the solution.
Great stuff. That was Dr. Kathy Bishop, and just want to thank everyone for tuning into this episode of Tea Talks Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Podbean for up-to-date podcast alerts and early access.